So thank you very much for having me. It's a great honor. For a few years now, I've heard about IGNU. I also have a friend, Kirk Paris, who has been doing some research here, and he's been telling me quite a lot about IGNU. So I've learned a lot through him. And I've also been quite engaged with the Open University of China, so slowly learning about these kind of mega universities, which is a new concept to me. And I've also been extremely impressed by many of the projects that India has been doing, such as the IGYAN course, such as the IITs, such as the NCERT. And I constantly feel that this has a huge potential, not just for India, but for the world. But that there is something missing, and I know that that people are also aware of this and working to really bridge the gap and make this material realize its full potential. So I will be talking a little bit today about some of my ideas. I would love to have... Kirk Paris also told me that he also always got very, very critical and very, very helpful feedback. So I'm hoping for that as well. And feel free to disagree with me and tell me your ideas. So I will talk for about 45 minutes, and then we'll have some feedback. So as Dr. Kanjilal said, I will briefly talk about three topics. The purpose of OER, I made a kind of a framework of four different purposes, because I believe that if we don't know what are we trying to achieve, we cannot evaluate whether we are successful, and we cannot choose how to proceed, really. So this is something that I came up with. I would like to see if this might be useful to you in your thinking. I will talk quite a bit about the value of openness, and I know there are some people in this room who agree with me, and we will see if this is useful. And finally, I will introduce a project that I'm working on called the Peer-to-Peer University, and it's something quite new. I would love for us to be able to collaborate with the Indian institutions or Indian individuals, and perhaps also be of use to India. So, purposes of OER. So I've done a lot of research, and my field right now is comparative education. So I'm very interested in looking at open educational resources around the world, and I really focus on not just seeing MIT and OC, you know, OpenCourseWare and these kind of things, but looking at, I've been looking quite a lot about China, India, Indonesia, Japan, Korea, and all these kind of different models of organizing, different purposes, different sustainability models and economic models. And I've tried to kind of sort out my ideas, because I feel like often people are doing open educational resources, they're not quite sure what they're trying to do. And so their projects, although very valuable, become a little bit half, not as useful as they could be. So, So exactly, if we don't know this purpose, then how can we evaluate our success? How can we design this project to be the most successful? So initially, after doing a lot of reading and discussing, I come up with three different, very broad categories. I said, if you're designing this open educational resource, you could design it for direct use. You could design it for reuse or for transparency, or several of these, but these are very broad categories. I will talk more about all of these, but after doing research in China on the open educational resource project there, I had to add one category, which is, the production process itself might actually serve as a goal. And what does that mean? We start by looking at production. Okay. So in China, you don't have to read all this, but this is a case study from a university in China. And in China, the project works like this. The government has a pot of money. And if your university thinks that you have a very good course, this is your specialty, this is really your strength, then you can put in an application and you say, this is why my pedagogy is top-notch. This is why my content is up-to-date and very comprehensive. This will be evaluated by peers and experts. And if they say, this is really top-quality course, they will give you a certain amount of money to improve your course and to put it online for everyone to look at. And the idea is that this course will inspire professors around the country, because, as you may know, China has gone through an explosion in enrollment. When I was in China in 2001, I was teaching English in a university. All of China had about 4 million students. Currently, China has about 27 million students. So in 8 years, it has about 6x. Okay, this is unprecedented in human history. So if this is going on, how can we maintain quality? Okay, this is their thinking, right? So in fact, the putting online and sharing with others, that is one of their goals. But the process that these professors go through is actually one of their goals too. Because You cannot put application as one person. You have to make a teaching team. So several professors getting together, often some very senior, very old, you know, 80-year-old professor, and some very young, gung-ho, knows technology professors. And this is one of the purposes, is to take these senior professors who rarely teach undergraduate and pull them into teaching. And taking these different professors that might not have much communication and putting them together. Then going through this process of reflection and considering about their class, that will improve their own teaching. So even before we put anything online, this project has had a purpose. And then we put it online, it has another purpose, right? So I was very interested to find this out, because usually we look at the material as it's put online and we say, is it useful or not? But in fact, I think, although this is most explicit in China, I think in any country, if you are going through this, if you know that your material will be available, for example, right now I'm recording this talk and I will make it available online. So there might be certain things that I don't want to say. There might be certain things that I want to think about because I know that it will be available. So this is an effect that we have to think about. Production. So that is... Why is that? Oh, I keep clicking the wrong button, sorry. There we go. Direct use. This is the most obvious. Then we say, okay, I want to learn something. Where do I go? I go to this website and it has everything. Here is the video. Here is the interactive quiz. Here is the textbook. Here is the communication module. Everything is there. All very well designed. And the best example is the Open Learning Initiative from Carnegie Mellon. They really spend a lot of money, a lot of pedagogical knowledge in designing these self-contained modules. And they do it for the courses that are, you know, the first-year university course, economics, statistics, and these kind of extremely high enrollment. And they did a lot of experiments showing that the people who only take this course with no teacher involvement in 6 weeks will do better at the exam than the students randomly selected who take the 12-week course with lectures at Carnegie Mellon, top university. Okay, but that is because this isn't just a textbook. It's not just PDF. It's like, everything is interacting. So you answer a quiz, you say, no, you're not right, go to this module, go to this. So this is a wonderful resource. However, it's extremely expensive to produce, right? And you need very much experts in this kind of design. Plus, it might not suit all subject fields, okay? It's good for learning introduction to statistics. But if you want students to deeply reflect on social issues, I mean, you need other students, right? So this has a very important role, but that's one role. Reuse. Okay, this is, and I will talk more about this in openness. The idea that you put something up there, it might not be complete. Okay, it might not be appropriate for the age group or target group, but you can have the license to change it, to modify it, to adapt it. Okay, this could be, I could take something from Igyan Kosh, and I edit it, and I add some examples relevant to Norway, and I use it in my class. Right. So you have an intermediary. You don't access it directly, but it goes through someone else. They might combine it with research from other places, and they might even use it for other things. Like I might take a chapter from Igyan Kosh and say, this is perfect for Wikipedia. I put it in the Wikipedia article or in the textbook. Okay, so this is repurposing. And a good example for this, there are so many examples for this actually. Connections is a repository of these kind of online modules. And it's especially appropriate because it all is stored in XML. So it's not PDF. It's very easy to copy and paste and edit. And actually, this is not like Wiki. In Wiki, anyone can edit the same page. But they say that's not so good for educational resource. Because if I make this wonderful resource, someone else comes in and writes something random, I cannot give it to my students. In this case, nobody can edit your module. But every module has a button saying, make a copy. And you click that button, and you have a copy that belongs to you, and you can edit it very easily. Translate it to other languages, whatever. So this is just one example. Actually, millions of resources out there that you can do this with. This is a very important aspect of this openness that I will talk about. Transparency. Actually, this is something I didn't think about at first. And a friend of mine, Mike Caulfield, who is at the Open Courseware Consortium, he wrote this blog post because a lot of people were criticizing MIT. You know, the MIT Open Courseware. And, I mean, this is a wonderful kind of beginning project, okay? In 2002, they made a decision. 2003, they started, and they said, this is something new. We really want to make this big. There's the value of openness. But a lot of people say, these resources are actually not that useful. I mean, if I'm a self-student, and I want to learn physics, and I go there, you have some random videos, you might have some random PowerPoints, then you have a curriculum that says, go and buy this book. So I cannot find this book in India. I mean, read this article. I don't have access to this database. Okay, so in that sense, it's not a complete resource. So if you say that your purpose is direct learning, actually, it's not very useful. If you're saying that it's reuse, it might be useful. But actually, because it's PDF and stuff like that, it's still difficult. But transparency means, you know, we want to kind of open the window and have a look. Now, what are these guys doing? Right? So the idea, and now actually OpenCourseWare is in more than 30 countries. And for me, I'm doing comparative research. Also, I speak certain number of languages. And so for me, being able to go and look at what are actually IGNU teaching, right? What are they teach? If I want to go to China and see how are they teaching democracy, this is a very interesting idea. Now, I cannot afford to just fly to China and say, can I sit in your lecture? Thank you, and I'm listening. Now we can go online and we can do this. This is an amazing thing. And in fact, I'm just working on a paper suggesting that especially students doing comparative research in developing countries that cannot afford to easily fly around the world could actually use this and say, okay, I want to look at how they teach economics in 10 different countries. Okay? This is actually now possible. So it's the idea of kind of opening the windows and looking in. It is a value in itself. And the good thing about that is it doesn't have to be very expensive. Because this material doesn't, I mean, for example, now I'm recording this. It's not costing me anything. Afterwards, it would take me 5 minutes to upload. Already, I spent so much time preparing my presentation. I mean, this extra 5 minutes is nothing, right? So it's very easy to make this material available. So that is a framework that I kind of developed. And I'm hoping that it's kind of... Now, I would love to hear, are there cases that didn't fall into any of these four? That would be very interesting to me. But I think that having this in mind, and we're saying, okay, we want to develop EVNCoach. We want to develop, NPTEL project or NCERT. And we ask, okay, what is your purpose? Okay, none of this purpose is correct or wrong. I'm not saying this is more noble purpose than other purpose, okay? But depending on what your purpose is, you might choose to design the project differently, and you might choose to evaluate it differently. And I find a lot of confusion. So, for example, in China, I told you, I identify two purposes. Okay, the first is the production process itself will have some impact on these teachers. Are anyone measuring that? You could easily have some, okay, let's have some look at your teaching before you did this or after. Let's have some qualitative interviews. Let's have some questionnaires. You can measure that because we know it's a purpose. I don't think anyone has measured it so far. The second one is we want to put it online as an example to inspire other teachers. Okay, we can measure that. Are anyone inspired? Right? But then I read all these articles. They're saying, are these research good for students? Well, is that the purpose, right? Maybe now it's becoming the purpose. So then we have to think about that. Anyway, this is just kind of to help you think. I'd love to hear your feedback. I keep clicking the wrong button. So, okay, this is an example of OpenCourseWare from Spain. So if you would like to know how they teach about India, for example, you can go and look at their video or their lecture. And of course, this is from hundreds of countries. So I'm going to talk a little bit now about openness. Okay, openness actually is a very complex concept. It has and of course, you are an open university. So you very well know one of the meanings of open, but there are many different meanings. And for me, this is a very key issue. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about this. In the open software world, because the problem is that the English language, usually it's very rich, but in this case, it's very poor. Because for the same two concepts, it has only one word. So if we say free, we could say free as in speech. Okay, this implies some rights, some freedoms. Or we can say free as in beer, or in chai, or in whatever it might be. It's free. You don't have to pay. But actually, you don't have any freedom. It's not any fundamental right. It's just you don't have to pay. So a lot of things online are free as in beer. Okay, you don't have to pay. For example, if you download Internet Explorer, you can go to Microsoft homepage and you can download. It's free. No pay. But you have no right to do anything except use it. Okay? Actually, if you take it, you download it, you give it to your friend, it's already legal. Probably they won't care, but actually it's illegal formally. If you want to look at how did they create this, if you want to modify it, if you want to translate it to Bengali, if you want to modify it so it runs easier on a slower computer, any of this you cannot do, okay? But if you have free as in freedom, you have this kind of option. So this is open source. And actually this kind of, this freedom idea is coming from open source. These people who say that software is becoming more and more important in our lives, and they're really structuring our lives. And if we don't have the opportunity to learn from them, to change them, to modify them, we're losing some of our freedom of action in this world. And this is really a crucial element. I mean, if everyone in India is using just Microsoft software, And one question is it's costing lots of money, but that's actually the smallest question. The biggest question is that India is losing its capacity to create the kind of software that they need for their specific situation. And exactly this translation is an excellent example. Because as far as I know, Microsoft has only been translated to Hindi. Okay, this is a huge language, so Microsoft is willing to translate it. But the government of India might say, okay, we realize that this, a Bengali and Tamil and all this, okay, we realize that you might not have a business interest in translating, but we have a national interest in promoting IT to everyone. So we are willing to pay for this. Okay, we are willing to do this work ourselves. Microsoft says, you cannot. Okay, this is not legal and you don't have the technical ability. With open source, you don't have to ask anyone's permission. And this is why Linux, OpenOffice, Firefox has been translated into 20, tens or 20 of Indian languages. This is the kind of freedom you get. And coming from this open source, it inspired a lot of people. They said, this is a wonderful thing. Now, how can we take this idea of openness and apply it to different fields? So can we have open culture? Can we have open education? Can we have open government? Can we have open business? Okay, so they really think about this. And in terms of culture, they came up with this idea of a Creative Commons license. And the commons, it comes from back in England in the old days, and probably in India as well. Everyone in the village, they would put their sheep on the same field, and all the sheep would graze. And this is the common resource belonging to this village. But then there was the enclosure movement, and suddenly everyone's building fences. And of course, in the US, it's because they get the barbed wire, which is very cheap, so suddenly they can enclose huge areas of land. And this is my land, and this is your land, right? And the same thing in academia, okay? We have this idea of shared knowledge, okay? Socrates belongs to everyone, and Bhagavad Gita belongs to everyone. Nobody has copyright, right? But today, what we are producing, we are keeping it in these closed boxes. So can we take this old idea of commons and really apply it on what we're producing today? So that is the broad idea. Actually, on the legal field, there's a very concrete reason. Because given the Geneva Copyright Treaty, which almost all countries in the world have to sign, before it used to be that you write the C in a circle and you say, this is copyright. You explicitly say that this is copyright. Currently, this kind of note, actually, this is just facts. But if here, for example, the title of this talk is copyright, how long? Until 50 or 70 years after the person who wrote it dies, okay? So even if I make a scribble on a napkin, it will be copyrighted for 100 years. Now, that might be good for some author of some very famous book, like Chetan Bhagat. But for my little scribble on a napkin, I don't really care. I would like for you to use it. Now, how do I give you permission in a legal sense? Actually, I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to have some big contract drawn up. So what this does is it facilitates everything. They say, okay, we have this kind of license already. And it's very simple for you to tell us, what do you want us to do with this? It's okay to use it. Okay. Can we change it? Because you might write this guy just writing this beautiful love poems to his girlfriend. And he might say, okay, I would like to share my love with the world. But don't change one word, because this is art. This is perfection. Don't change one word. Okay, he has that right. He might say, okay, I'm happy for you to share this on the streets, paste it on every flagpole. But please, if you're publishing it and making money off my poem, then I would like a cut. So don't make money off it, right? You have these kind of choices. Now, one more thing I have to mention, which I didn't mention about this open source software. Actually, for the open source, what they say is you can do anything with this, okay? You can edit, you can change, you can share with everyone. You can sell it and make money. What you can't do is take that right away from the next person. So I can take my Linux, I can change its name, I can translate to Bangla, I can go to some village, I can sell this DVD. But I have to give that person the source code so that person can also change. And this is the same for this one, right? That, okay, you can modify it, but you have to give this to the people. And in fact, when it comes to, we're just discussing with Dr. Kandila, a lot of open educational resource projects choose to use the non-commercial license. Because they say, yeah, we are all educational institutions, we can all share, but these companies cannot get access. Actually, I don't agree. Because if you have the share alike, which means, actually some people call it the virus, because it infects everything it touches. Everything will be open. Okay? What that means is, let's take the example with MIT. Okay? We already talk about MIT. We say these courses are not complete. They're kind of skeletons. I mean, there's some good material, but it's not complete. What if some private institution takes the MIT course and say, we would like to use this, but we need to add to it. So we will hire some guy to write, you know, some introduction and some add some pictures here, add some clarification there. Because of the share alike license, everything that they add will also be available to everyone in the world. Okay? Then, of course, some student will be paying. That student is paying for the supervision, for the feedback, thank you, for all these kind of things. That you have to pay for anyway. That's not free. But this material that is improved will be available to everyone in the world. So why is that a bad thing, right? I mean, Linux itself, in fact, there are hundreds of companies making a lot of money, like IBM spending millions of dollars on Linux. But Linux is available freely to anyone and is much improved because of this. Okay, that's just my little point about that. Okay, so here's a... Now I'll talk a little bit about this transformative. You know, why do we want to make this open? That's not just to save money. It's really because we can work together in a different way. So here's an example. This is for sharing and collaborating on music. Okay? So let's say that, you know, I'm very good at singing, you know, this traditional Indian music. I wish I were. So I will sing some song and I will record it. And I will put it on here and I will give it this open license. Let's say some guy in Norway says, wow, this Indian rhythm is very nice. I wonder if we can put some traditional Norwegian instruments, some, you know, the fiddle. And he will download it, add the fiddle, and upload it again under open license. And then some reggae girl in New York, I think we can add the bongo drums to this, you know? And this amazing international music will emerge, but none of these people know each other. And they didn't have to ask for permission, okay? Because this license enables people to collaborate without knowing each other, without having to always ask for permission. It gives permission up front. So this site exists. You're welcome to visit it. There's hundreds of examples of... They had this competition with a famous African artist. They put it up. Not just the MP3, but individual track for all the different instruments, right? So if you want the voice, you can have. If you want the bongo, you can have. If you want the flute, you can have. And they, who can come up with the most wonderful remix? So you have this African artist, and you have him, suddenly you have African with reggae. Suddenly you have African with classical music. African with, you know, Polish, Jewish music. I mean, this kind of wonderful international collaboration is enabled by openness, right? So to me, there are three pillars of openness. The first is an open license, okay? You have to give this legal permission. And this is the Creative Commons, for example, that we can use. The second, and this is really important, I think very often forgotten, for software, it's not enough for you to give me the .exe file and the open license. With the .exe file, I cannot do anything. It's just ones and zeros. You have to give me the underlying source code so that I can edit it. Actually, for culture, it's the same thing. If you give me the PDF and the open license, how can I change it? It's possible, but very difficult. Please give me the Word document, the PowerPoint, some file format that I can actually change. Okay. In fact, some people now, they're making the open movie, the open documentary. They don't just give you the documentary. They say, here are the 70 hours of video that we filmed. Out of those 70 hours, we make together this half an hour. Take these 70 hours and see what you can make out of it. Maybe you will have a completely different angle. I mean, that is real openness. And finally, open collaboration. So enable these kind of people. I mean, you can make this project by yourself. So IGNU is telling some professor to write some text, and this is very controlled form, and that's fine. But after it's put online, you know, have this platform where people can collaboratively work on improving it.
And open usage can't be a pillar of security.
Sorry?
Open usage.
Yes, well, open usage actually is implicit in everything.
No,
so,
it's not implicit. Open user is implicit.
Yes.
I'm asking open usage.
So what is your definition of open usage?
Open usage is open to everybody to use.
Actually, so I totally agree. I totally agree. So we could absolutely add that. I will add it.
Otherwise, there will be no collaboration.
Exactly. Thank you. So I will add that. So I will tell two very short stories that hopefully also illustrate this. And then I will look at how we can apply that to some Indian projects. Okay. These are some personal stories. They might still seem a bit silly, but hopefully they illustrate this kind of collaboration. You hopefully all know Wikipedia. Now, a number of years ago, I did my undergrad in development studies. And development studies is a very vast field. So we have so many different things. And for me, I have to study also soil science. Okay, because agriculture is so important. So what kind of soil can grow and how can you have soil erosion and all this stuff? I have to memorize all these pH values. For me, it's very difficult because I'm a social scientist. So I have lots of problems. And this is the night before the exam. I'm sitting with my friend and cramming all these different kinds of soil and what is their pH value and what layers of silt and clay. And we're having problems. And actually, one kind of soil is called pod sol. This is about 70% of the arable land of Canada. So I said, okay, usually Wikipedia has a very clear explanation of things. So I want to go there and check it out. I found that pod sol has no article. So what is this going on? 70% of the arable land of Canada has no article on Wikipedia. And I realized that I'm not an expert in this. I might fail tomorrow's exam, but I know something. I know more than nothing. So me and my friend together, we have a look in the textbook and we write certain few sentences about what we know about pod sol. This is starting out. This is a seed, planting a seed. Next day we do the exam. Okay, not very well, but we pass, so we're good. We forget about this. Half a year later, we come back. We say, hey, do you remember that crazy night? We're sitting up after midnight and we're even writing this article on Wikipedia, things we don't know about very much. What happened to this article? Wonderful thing about Wikipedia is that you can actually trace every single contribution made. So as you see, and this is just the start of it, many people editing, and we don't know who they are. They didn't ask for permission, right? Editing this article over half a year. The result is a long and nice, it's much longer than what you can see here. Very scientific article. They will have citations. They will have nice illustrations. I mean, this is really a quality work that is available to the whole world. I could never create this by myself. But maybe because I planted that seed, because I wrote those first sentences, that inspired other people to take it further. Right? So this is the kind of collaboration that we enable. Open usage, open collaboration. Another example, this is also about Wikipedia. You know that Wikipedia has different language versions. So you can look at the article about Delhi in English or in Hindi. Now, sadly, Hindi Wikipedia is quite undeveloped, but we're hoping that that will... Right now, there are two sentences about Norway. So I'm giving a challenge to anyone in this room. You can double the size of this article by writing two more sentences. Okay? Yeah. So, Norway, my country. Because my Hindi is not very good. Hindi. Right now it says Norway is a country in Northern Europe. Its capital is Oslo. Okay? So standing challenge to this room. In a week I will check back and I will see if there are four sentences. Okay? So anyway, you have these articles in English and Hindi and all kinds of languages. Sorry?
We had a lecture by Spian here.
Yes. Now, all these articles are actually connected. If you're reading in English, you say, okay, do you want to read it in Hindi, in Bangla, in Chinese? Okay? And you have a list on the side with all these languages. So I had this realization that, in fact, if you extract this information, you could create a dictionary. Because then suddenly you have the name of Norway in English, or in Chinese, and in Hindi, right? So, and because not only is it an open license, you can download the whole database. They give this. So I wrote the script, and I make an English-Chinese dictionary. And of course, I put, this is my blog, I also put the whole code. So anyone who wants to do the same thing, they can do it. And what is the result? Of course, many common words will not be there. Bird, to be. But many words, for example, if you want to know how to write Indira Gandhi in Chinese, okay, this will not be in the dictionary, but it will be in Wikipedia. So here's an example of the list for education. I mean, imagine trying to find the National Higher Education Entrance Examination in the dictionary, how to write it in Chinese. You will not find it, but here you will find it. So this was very useful for me because I'm learning Chinese. But because I put it on my blog, some other people said, hey, we want to make this dictionary of Norwegian and Chinese. Actually, this doesn't exist online. And here they have Norwegian and Chinese. Some other guy said, I want to do this Thai English dictionary. And he did. Okay. So by sharing how I did it, I'm inspiring these other people. Now, the key message from this example is by having something open, you enable reuse that you never thought of. Because Wikipedia, its purpose is to create articles. My first example is exactly Wikipedia's. That's their purpose. My second example, they never thought that by having these links, they can make a dictionary. But because it's open, they enable that. And actually, there are so many other examples of people doing creative things. Okay, so quickly, what are the cases from India? And how can we apply these lessons that hopefully I've been sharing? Okay, so National Program on Technology and Enhanced Learning, right? They put thousands of hours of video from IITs online. This is a wonderful thing. I mean, right now, as I told Dr. Kanjila, if a student in Norway is having problem with the physics class and really cannot catch the meaning of the professor, they can go online and they have the choice. Do I want to watch the lecture from MIT? Do I want to watch the lecture from IIT? So really, right now, these guys are competing on an equal level. And the only thing changing is the quality. And we'll see who is the best quality. Maybe IITs will win, and that would be a wonderful kind of example. Okay? But what is this going on? Copyright. It's illegal to copy, adapt, edit. Don't rent it, don't resell it, don't export it, don't transmit it in any way. Okay, so what is going on here? If I want to say, I say, okay, actually, I don't want to watch this whole hour. These 10 minutes of explaining, you know, horizontal motion is very useful. I want to include it on my website. I'm not allowed to do that. If I say, actually, a lot of people in India cannot access internet. I want to put this on a DVD, and I want to sell it very cheaply to my students. I cannot do that. I say, I want to subtitle this in a region. I cannot do that. What is anyone gaining on this? And actually, I was reading on their website, they are thinking about using an open license, so let us hope that that will happen. Because by using that open license, they will enable all this kind of reuse that they never thought of, right? This is my case. Igyankosh, okay? Once again, a wonderful example. And I've been talking everywhere I go in the world, really. I've been talking a lot about this. I'm saying MIT is nothing. Actually, Igyankosh is much more impressive. And if IGNU was in the US, this would be on front page of New York Times. Okay? Actually, it's revolutionary. But because it's in India, we don't care. So I'm really pressing people to take notice of this.
There's no copyright on this.
There is. This is the problem, right? There is two problems. So here is an example of a text, right? It's wonderful because in MIT they say buy this book. Okay, I cannot get this book. Here they give you the whole book, which is amazing, right? But two problems with this, okay? First one, copyright. Second one, format. Okay, this is a PDF. Later, when I'm becoming a university professor, I might very much like to include this in my readings for my class. But I might like to add some examples. Here is the cost analysis in education with the Indian examples. Okay, I would like to add the case study from China. I would like to invite my friends from Germany to add the case study from Germany. Okay? Right now, first of all, I have to get the text somehow. This one is scanned. That's fine. I understand that's difficult. But a lot of them are generated from the Word document. So please give me that Word document, right? But secondly, allow me to take this and liberate it from the PDF, from the Igyankosh, and put it on a wiki and invite all my friends to collaborate. And if you have the share alike license, that resource will also be available to IGNU. Yeah. So this is, as I'm talking to Dr. Kanjila, this is going on, okay? This is I'm cognizant of that, and I'm just supporting that.
But you can't edit this at your place.
No.
Exactly. But this is. Yes. Exactly. So this process is going on. I know that. Exactly. And as I said, the key thing is next time that professor from IGNU is teaching their course, she can have a look and say, well, look, they took my resource and they actually improve it. And they have the right to take it back and use it. So in this case, IGNU is really gaining a lot, as well as making a huge benefit to the world. So I know that this work is going on. I mean, the people I talk with at IGNU, they all very much understand this. So this is not meant as criticism of IGNU. This is, you know, encouraging you in taking this even further, right? This is also, you know, National Council of Education Research and Training. They put some hundreds of textbooks online. Once again, a wonderful case. Yes. However, so certain problems are there. The website is completely useless because most people are not able to download these things. Of course, the other problem is here you have things which are very much integrated with graphics. Okay. If I want to translate, in fact, my friend here is doing some projects in Uganda. And in Uganda, there's an even large, I mean, in India, there is a problem with getting enough material in Indian languages, but at least some there is. I mean, there are lots of things going on. In Uganda, the school is in English, but people don't understand English, right? Colonial attitude. So he is trying to work with them to create different resources in their local languages. I mean, it would be a wonderful project to take some of these books and translate into their language. Exactly. But how can we do that if you give us the picture? Are we supposed to spend hours on Photoshop to edit? This is impossible, right? So make this open. Now, as for the website itself, there is a guy in Bangalore. He's just a regular guy working in an IT company. He saw this. He said, this is wonderful, but how come I can't download it easily? So he wrote some software. He downloaded every single PDF, and he put it on a much easier to use website. Right? So here, it's much easier to see what books are there, and you can download the whole PDF. So the problem is that what he did is illegal. Okay? Now, I'm saying this is a problem. I'm not saying because he shouldn't have done it, but because it shouldn't be illegal. I mean, this is a guy spending his own time and energy and money on making something more available to Indians. That should be encouraged. He should get a medal. He should not be put in prison, right? So this kind of openness ideally needs to happen. So, you know, by making India's research and teaching available, so you benefit the world. I mean, India really is making huge contributions to the entire world, not just to India. And I'm incredibly grateful. But you also benefit yourself, right? And this is the key issue. You're not just doing it out of the goodness of your heart. In fact, all of your own projects will be more efficient. So my last piece, I would like to briefly introduce a project that I helped start it, and we're now developing it in the early stages. And I would love to actually see if this can be of use to India, if Indians want to help participate, and even if there are ways of collaborating with some IGNU projects. So our basic idea is that you have all these resources. We've been talking about OER, okay? And OER is wonderful, but actually it's quite bad. Okay? It's a PDF, it's a video, it's a library, right? Now, since the beginning of times, certain people have been able to go to the library and spend 10 years reading what they could find and learn a lot. Okay? This is not something new. 1,000 years ago, if you live in a big city, you have this possibility. Very few people are able to do that. Okay? You need to really have very much motivation. You need to know where to start. And you don't get any feedback. I mean, it's quite hard to motivate yourself. So one way of using these open education resources, as I said, is to use them in existing institutions. Okay? So IGNU could say, here, I'm teaching this course. Here's a great resource I want to use in my course. Okay, there's no problem. Fine. But what about all the people who are not in a formal institution? In India, 5% enrollment rate, right? It's extremely low. And they're working hard to expand it. But this will take time. Even in China, it's 25%. That's still low. Even in Norway, it's 60%. But what about all those people in full-time work? What about those engineers graduated 15 years ago? I mean, now we're talking lifelong learning. I mean, they're not going to take 4 years off their work to go study full-time, right? So what about all those people who just want to learn for the love of it, okay? So I would like to learn about Hindi literature. Okay, I'm not going to go take another undergrad in Hindi literature. I would like to learn. So how can we facilitate? We take all this material that is there, and we facilitate this learning process, okay? And actually, my inspiration comes from this guy called David Wiley. He's a professor in Utah in open education. And he started this course. He said, okay, I'm doing research on open education. I should make my own class open. So not just the resource, but the actual class. And the nice thing about it is that the technology is very simple. He has a wiki, and he said, okay, for each week, there will be some readings. All these readings from everywhere on the internet. Here's a report from the UN. Here's a video from Google Video, something like this. But I assemble it in a coherent package. Because if I go to Google, I want to learn about sociology. I type in sociology in Google, 2 million hits. If I click start on the first one, then the second one, then the third one, this is not a way of learning, right? So the first thing he does is he creates this open curriculum, which is different from MIT because actually every link is open. Okay? It might not be actually like openly licensed, but at least you can get it for free. So that's the first step. Then, as you see, for each week, he has some questions. He said, in your opinion, is the right to education a basic human right? Why or why not? Okay. Is open access to OER sufficient, or should we really force education? Should it be a mandate, right? In Norway, if the kid doesn't go to school, the police will come and pick them up at home and take them to school. I mean, this is forceful. But should we say, no, you have the right, you have the access, but you choose yourself to take this right. So discuss, okay? In your own blog, just write whatever you want. So this is my blog again from a few years ago. So I take this question, and then I go read all the other people's blogs. And I say, what do they think? And actually, at first, I read that UN is very dry, you know, long report, very, very dry, lots of statistics. I don't have that much inspiration. Then I read, and of course, all the students in this class are very motivated, right? They're not taking it because they have to. They're taking it because they really care about this issue. They have a lot of life experience. There are some teachers from Italy. There are some PhD students from US. There are some activists from different places. And they're going and they're bringing their experience into this class. And I found so many links. I was like clicking all these links and reading all these things and being very inspired. And so I wrote actually, you know, quite a long blog post. This is my first week. Yeah. I mean, any teacher would be happy to receive such a response. And here's a teacher who has no sanction. If I don't submit, there will be no consequence for me. But I do it because I'm so fascinated by this, right? So I write this and I get comments. The other students will read it and they say, oh, this is very interesting, but have you thought about that? At the end of the week is when the professor comes in and says, he reads all this stuff and he says, it kind of sums it up, pulls it back together. Oh, Stian said this, which is interesting, but then Peter had this other tack, right? Then next week we start again. It's a very simple model, but it works so well. I mean, I learned more in that course than most of my university courses at the best university in Canada, I'm telling you. So this inspired a lot of people, and actually a number of people start similar kind of courses, and they even call it the Wiley Wiki model, because this guy called Wiley. So I thought, okay, this is wonderful, but actually everyone's teaching about open education. I mean, we should be able to use open education to teach about other things too, right? I mean, right now we're just teaching to each other. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that in this model, actually it's quite, I mean, to do this, you need someone who's really understanding all this concept, who has a firm grasp of technology, who has a lot of support from their institution to be able to do this. Say, I'm going to take this class, I'm working for this university, you're paying me salary, I'm going to teach anyone who wants to. They're not paying you. I mean, you have to really have a good level of support. So can we make a platform where we are, you know, having this pedagogical model, we're having the technical support, we're having this community, and you can come here and teach your course. And how would that look like, right? So a number of us met at different conferences. We, for a certain number of years, we keep discussing this. And finally we say, the only way we're going to find out is by trying. Okay? So this is very experimental. We are really learning as we go along. And so we decide to start this peer-to-peer university. And it's supposed to be a platform for conducting these open courses and platform for research, because we're all interested in research, and our idea is not to have some blueprint and then make it happen and success, we're done. The idea is to really push the field of knowledge about these open collaborative learning processes forwards, and ideally, you know, inspire not just ourselves but also many other people, that they can learn from us, just like we are learning from Yigan Kosh and we're learning from Chinese experience. So we started in September 2009, okay? And our model is 6-week courses, because we don't want people to have to commit to so long, but if they want, they can have series of courses. But 6-week courses, limited enrollment, because we don't want 60 people, how can we read all their blogs? I mean, we could even have different classes on the same topic, that's fine, but each class, only 15 people. You have to apply, because we want to have some barrier that motivates people. Free, and acceptance is not based on how much you know, but how enthusiastic you are. Okay, can you show us that you really committed to this course? Then we will accept you willingly. So we have these courses, and actually a lot of the courses are quite interesting. We have behavioral economics and decision making, copyright for educators. That was our most popular class, because so many teachers are very confused. Am I allowed to use this material? If I develop a class, does the copyright belong to me or to the school board? Am I allowed to put it online? And how does this happen? So a lot of teachers were there. Introduction to cyberpunk literature is kind of science fiction. So these classes are not kind of introduction to economics 101. You know, this is not first year classes. It's very high level classes. Actually, we also want to experiment with these math classes. But for the first, this was just whatever people want to teach. You know, what is your passion that you want to share? So similar way, we have the syllabus. You know, this is actually based on afforestation efforts in India. So there's a collaboration with an Indian NGO that we did this course. Okay, this is the copyright for educators. They will have some outline, and then they have the small groups. And of course, you know, this will be different in each country. So the Indian copyright situation is different from China, from US. The teacher cannot know this. That's fine. Your homework is to go research the situation in your country, and you will give some write-up, and they have some case studies, you know, and they will edit these case studies together in groups, everything happening online. Now, of course, then after the course is done, we now have all their answers, and we're not throwing them away, and everything that's produced is openly licensed. So even though only 15 people can get in, anyone can visit the classroom and see everything they're discussing, everything they're producing. So next time we're running this class, and we will run it again because it's so high demand, they will have access to what's been done before. Okay, so after certain years of iteration, we will have a wonderful database of copyright policies around the world. I mean, so this is kind of, that's not our purpose, but it's the side effect, right? And who knows, maybe because it's open, other people can reuse it in ways they want. So basically, this was our old tech platform, by the way. This was just used by taking things that already exist, trying to hook them together. Here's our current status. And I have 30 seconds left, so... first of all, we got certain kind of funding from Hewlett Foundation, from Shuttleworth Foundation in South Africa, and we're spending it on developing a new platform that's really integrated and will also enable us to experiment with different features. It's built on Drupal, which is open source. Of course, this platform in itself will be open source. Okay, so you are very welcome to run a course on our platform, but you are also free to take it and, you know, do what you want with it. Yeah. Drupal is it's used by a lot of platforms. We're developing a support system for new courses. So we're not calling people teachers or professors, because the idea is you don't have to be the foremost expert in your field. In fact, you can learn along with all the students. It's like a study group. Basically, all you do is you take the extra responsibility for developing this curriculum. Of course, you can consult others. You can ask some professor to help you and to keep it moving along, right? But so there shouldn't be this huge barrier to teaching. In fact, a lot of people say that the best way of learning is to teach. So I suggested to my friend, he said, I have to learn some statistics for my project. I said, why don't you teach statistics? Because through this process, you will learn a lot as well, right? So at first, these course organizers, they came to us and they said, I would like to teach this course. We said, welcome. They said, how do I teach it? We said, we don't know. Actually, we just started. Please try what you can come up with. They did different kind of model. Some were more successful than others, and we're learning. But now, for the new course organizer, we already have this experience. We have these senior course organizers that are willing to act as mentors. We have some documents that will tell you about the, I mean, still freedom to experiment, but you will be learning from other people's mistakes. So, you know, that will be easier and easier. We will launch the second cycle. So we did the first September, 6 weeks. We then met in Berlin for 5 days, these people. First time to meet in the real world and really intense kind of working on the future. We're now developing the tech platform, and the second cycle will be launched end of January, start of February this year. So very few weeks. And now, right now, we're getting course proposals. We're helping them develop. I mean, very busy season. We're expanding to new languages. So we started out with English only. We will expand to other languages, but slowly. Right now, we have the rule that some course organizer that already taught a course has to know your language. Because otherwise, how can we give you support? How can we make sure quality? But already we're quite international, and we know a lot of languages, so this would be no problem. Probably we're starting with Portuguese, because we have a very strong community in Brazil. So we're experimenting also with that. Hopefully also in the Hindi or other Indian languages would be welcome. And we're supporting research. This is a very key issue for us. So we ourselves are trying to publish. We're trying to actually do very, you know, rigorous research about this, but we're also very much inviting other people. So, I mean, if there are graduate students or professors in India, so many topics are there, and we're extremely happy to work with them. And here's some of the research questions that I ask myself and that are open. Okay, so first of all, of course, motivation, both for course organizers and for students. Because, as I said, if you leave, there's no consequence except you don't learn. So how can we keep these people in there? And there's a number of ways of designing the course, designing the social structure that we're thinking about changing. Okay. Measuring the actual learning, right? Are you just having fun for 6 weeks, or how much did you actually learn? This is, of course, very difficult questions, but very interesting. Accessibility, different kinds of learners. I mean, at the first, actually, because we kind of growing slowly. So who has heard about us? At the first was mainly people reading blogs about open education, reading about Twitter, people very much into education. 60% had more than master's degree. It's an extremely highly educated crowd. So they will be successful. How about a person who dropped out of high school? Will they have the kind of management skills, the self, you know, control to be able to do this? So we don't know. That's a huge challenge. And how do we have to redesign to be able to cater to those people. That's a huge, and actually for my PhD, I'm hoping to really look into this. Link between iterations of courses, because, you know, I mean, our approach is very constructivistic. Okay, this is different from the guided kind of a discovery that the Open Learning Initiative, right? It's very much, we're building this together. So in one sense, as I said about the copyright course, we're building this database of knowledge, and that's a wonderful thing. On another sense, you know, if you go to English Wikipedia, a lot of people feel that they don't want to contribute because every article is there. I mean, you go to Norway, it's like 15 pages with the site is perfect. So I feel like I don't have anything to add. If you go to Hindi Wikipedia, okay, it's not complete. That means it's so low barrier. You write two sentences and you've doubled this article. And by writing and producing, you are learning. We want to encourage our students to do that. It's not just absorbing, they're producing. That's our model. So our question is, how can we balance between this idea that we would like to learn from the experience of courses, but on the other hand, if you come after 5 years in the Copyright for Educators, and this material is so complete you have nothing to add, that is really a problem for your learning process. So this is a very interesting, I think, dilemma. We're looking at, when it comes to, some people don't need recognition for their learning, okay? I'm interested in learning Hindi literature just for fun, okay? 1 minute. So this...
1 second.
Okay.
30 seconds.
Huh? Okay. Yes. Okay. This is the last slide. So, very quickly, some people don't need recognition, some people need it. Two ways. We can hook into existing accreditation, maybe through FlexiLearn, maybe through recognition of prior learning, maybe through advanced placement, or we can have alternative ways of showing, this is my portfolio, this is my blah, blah, blah. Pictures from our workshop? Thank you.